This is The Legal Impact, the weekly show presented by the University of New Hampshire Franklin Pierce School of Law, now accepting applications for JD and graduate programs. Learn more and apply at law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire and UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead, and today I'm joined by Professor John Graby, director of the Warren B. Rudman Center for Justice Leadership and Public Service. Learn more about the center at law.unh.edu/Rudman. Welcome back.
Thanks, AJ.
So we've discussed extensively the divisive concepts law, and there's, or known as the divisive concepts law, to be more specific, in the state of New Hampshire, which has raised all sorts of concerns in the education field. But we've basically focused on the enforcement of it.
Right.
I would really love to discuss the other side of it, which is the kind of the freedom of speech, First Amendment, the flexibility of teachers. You've brought up the chilling effect and the implications of it. Where do we begin on this?
Well, we might begin with the fact that two lawsuits have been filed in federal court challenging the constitutionality of the law. And as you pointed out, we call it the divisive concepts law as shorthand. That was a term that was in an earlier version of the bill that's not in the final version of the bill. But just to remind listeners, the law contains a bunch of speech restrictions that prohibit state public employers, including public K-12 teachers, from, among other things, instructing that persons are, quote, inherently superior to or inferior to others, quote, inherently racist or sexist, quote, should be discriminated against, or, quote, should not attempt to treat others equally because of their age, sex, gender, identity, sexual orientation, race, creed, color, marital status, familial status, mental or physical disability, religion, or national origin. Reading it's, as fast as I can.
If you read through that whole bill, I've read it. It's just over and over. It's very clear. It's like this is what we're saying over and over again.
Right. But they are speech restrictions. They are admonitions to teachers in particular to steer clear of certain topics. Now, you might think immediately, well, there's a First Amendment problem there, right? Because you have government regulating speech. And isn't that, you know, what the free speech clause of the First Amendment is all about protecting? Well, it's not quite so simple in that context. When the government, offers a school system, a public school system, it has to make choices about what is communicated in the classroom. And more generally, the Supreme Court has recognized something called the government speech doctrine, which is that the government can engage in speech, and that when it does so, it can take a certain viewpoint. It isn't restricted to being viewpoint neutral in the same way that it is when it's regulating somebody else's speech. Mm-hmm. And so the idea here is that these teachers are agents for the state. Therefore, they are delivering government speech, and the government has a right when it supervises its employees to tell them what they can say and what they can't say when speech is part of their job.
And this is especially relevant with teachers, where they're specifically hired to train kids as much as we like to say that they're just teaching the basics, there's a lot of developmental things that go into K-12 education.
Absolutely. And what's a little different about this, I think, maybe more than a little different, is that usually, states adopt standards and say that, this is going to be taught, this is going to be taught, this is going to be taught. So it specifies what is to be covered. It's unusual to frame it in the negative in this way, to say that you cannot say this, this, or this. And then, as we've talked about before, to attach penalties to that, either a school district or a teacher is judged to have violated these provisions. That's what makes it a little different. But it's not so clearly a First Amendment issue. Now, I'm not sitting here saying there is no First Amendment problem. Only one of the two lawsuits, though, that has been filed has actually made a First Amendment claim. The commonality between the two lawsuits is a claim based on doctrine known as vagueness, which is a due process doctrine, usually, although it can be connected to speech. But both lawsuits say that the law is unconstitutionally vague in that it fails to apprise those who are regulated of what the limits are, what they can say and what they can't say. And so it's an element of due process that before you can be held to have violated the law needs to have put you on notice of what is allowed and what is disallowed. It doesn't mean that the government needs to prove that you actually knew what was allowed and disallowed, but the law needs to have been clear so that a reasonable person would understand what was allowed and what was disallowed.
Yeah, and what's very strange about this specifically in the world of education is usually you're being given directives over pedagogy and testing and things like that, as opposed to we don't necessarily think you're doing this right now, but in case you are, here's a bunch of rules. We're not outlining specifically what you're doing wrong or doing right with us.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, you know, and we've talked about this before too, but it's also unusual for the government to really invite the public to go after public employees, which mm-hmm. this statute does. It invites any aggrieved person, any person aggrieved by a perceived violation of this, to bring a lawsuit against the school or school district and to make a complaint, an individual complaint to the Department of Education about the teacher. Mm-hmm. And that's really unusual. I mean, we've talked in other podcasts about the qualified immunity doctrine, which gives police officers, for example, a little extra zone of immunity to make reasonable but mistaken misjudgments. This statute is quite to the contrary of that.
Are there laws like this with regards to other government agencies in New Hampshire or other states that maybe this could be equated to, or is this very kind of unique?
Well,
I think police officers, for example, I'm assuming they have some pretty strict regulations, but it may not be specifically this.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that. I mean, first of all, this applies to everybody, by the way. So this is, I mean, it's really... it's come to public attention in the mm-hmm. context of education, but this is a ban on all public employees engaging in this prohibited speech during, for example, training sessions and mm-hmm. things like that. But it is, you know, again, I won't profess to have read every law in this state and every, you know, employer handbook, but singling out certain topics that are forbidden as a matter of speech strikes me as pretty unusual, in my experience.
I don't know if this is more reaching or philosophical way of looking at it or what, but to me it seems like this is a law that would have not even been thought twice about if this was during the civil rights movement or something like that. Do you think that interpretation's fair, that maybe the times have changed a lot and that this really stands out because of the era we're in versus 50 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, you know, if you flipped it around and you imagine a similar law, but a law directed, you know, like you say, back in the, you know, 50s or 60s against racist speech,
right.
You know, sort of, you know, putting down members of racial minority groups, you know, there would be other problems that beyond the speech problems there. I mean, you'd have, you know, arguably a violation of the Equal Protection Clause under law that was developed over that last century. But I think your point is well taken. I mean, I think the idea that, you know, at just a general level, the idea of telling teachers that they should not engage in discriminatory speech probably feels to many people like a no-brainer, you know? And I think that's part of the reaction to these laws is that, you know, I mean, if it is really true, as the Attorney General says and as, you know, the Human Rights Commission have said, that this only prohibits you from talking about a very narrow band of topics and advocating a very narrow band of positions. If that's really true, then the teacher's like, well, nobody's doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the controversy arises because adjacent to this statutory language are all sorts of conversations about our history with slavery, about mm-hmm. the history of the civil rights movement, affirmative action, that many people, especially, you know, over the last couple of years have said, you know, so we've had with the rise of Black Lives Matter and sort of a renewed focus on America's longstanding racial problem, there are lots of people think these are conversations that really need to still happen, not mm-hmm. still, they need to happen because we've really not dealt with this problem fully. And I think sort of the story behind the story here is a lot of people understand that this as sort of a response to that mm-hmm. and pushback against the idea that we should confront our racist past.
The Department of Education here in New Hampshire obviously is coming out many times stating that this isn't a concern. They even have an FAQ on their website that it's actually on the doj.nh.gov website saying this is fine, that we can have these conversations around the subject matter you just said. But in the long run, as different people take over these departments, once again, it seems like the vagueness aspect is really giving me the problematic side of it, where maybe it's okay right now, generally speaking. It doesn't seem like there's a huge slew of lawsuits that have come through at this point. I think maybe even one or two or something like that. But is this more of a long-term issue as opposed to a right-now issue?
Well, I think it's both, really. You know, because this statute is so unique in inviting any aggrieved person to bring a complaint, the opinion of the Attorney General and the opinion of the Human Rights Commission and the opinion of the Department of Education, you know, all of those may be interesting, but they're not authoritative. This is a statute. And so, you know, if I'm a parent and the Attorney General and I have a complaint about something that I believe was a violation of this statute, and the Attorney General weighs in and says, I don't think that's a violation of the statute, well, I still have the right to go to a judge and say, it's all well and good. The Attorney General doesn't think so, but the statute says this, and Your Honor, that's what's different. And more generally, what's also different is that we usually don't invite the public to enforce penalties against teachers. Usually that's something that's taken up within the educational establishment. If there's a teacher who's talking about things that they shouldn't be talking about or failing to talk about subjects that they should be, you know, usually you don't, nobody has a basis for a lawsuit. Somebody could make a complaint and then a superintendent would take action, you know.
If this ultimately gets struck down in the courts, do you think, like the teacher loyalty bill that was also brought up this previous New Hampshire House session, is also going to be on the chopping block with this? That was more specific with around communism, but there's these rumblings that we're going to put socialism and stuff like that into it. I mean, is that different to them, what we're seeing with this?
Well, there's a different body of First Amendment law about public employee loyalty oaths, and the First Amendment does protect to a certain degree against compelled speech. So I don't think that the outcome of these lawsuits, that the outcomes of these lawsuits are going to necessarily dictate the same outcome in a legal challenge to those loyalty oaths.
So these are most likely going to be hitting the courts. I mean, do you think this is something that's going to be long and drawn out, or is it going to be pretty quick?
Well, no, it'll take a while. I mean, these two cases that are challenging the so-called divisive concepts bill are just at the motion to dismiss stage in federal court. The state has come in and said, we don't think that the law is unconstitutionally vague. The plaintiffs in both cases have filed their response saying, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. So the first step will be a federal judge will determine whether he believes it's before Judge Barbadoro over at the federal court. So Judge Barbadoro will decide as an initial matter whether he thinks the law is or is not unconstitutionally vague. And he may just simply deny the motion to dismiss and say, we need more facts. Yeah. You know, that's also a possibility. But it is something that could be decided as a legal matter. If he decides that it is unconstitutional, there would be further proceedings in the district court. If he dismisses the case, if he agrees with the state, I think we would expect to see the plaintiffs take an immediate appeal to an intermediate federal appeals court, which is the First Circuit. And so, you know, the process will begin playing out. And again, there will be interest in this because there are similar bills that have been enacted all around the country. New Hampshire's not alone.
Yeah. I mean, how does our law compare to some of these others?
Some are more constitutional. Honestly, they're more constitutionally problematic because they're more similar to the initial version of this law.
There's a fair amount of altering between what was the original divisive concepts and this one.
Right. I mean, if you're talking about a vagueness problem and if you're saying don't teach divisive concepts, I think the vagueness argument is a pretty strong one. Like, you know, well, what is a divisive concept? You know, different, you know, some physicists disagree about certain aspects of physics, is that then a divisive concept that should not be taught? You know, I mean, that's kind of pushing it to an absurd level, but you see the point.
Using your magic fortune-telling ball, I mean, how high up do you think these cases are going to go? I mean, is this something that could, in theory, reach the Supreme Court? And do you feel like the conservative-leaning court that we have right now is going to have a drive one way or the other inherently?
I think it could. I don't know whether it would be New Hampshire or some other state, but I think the issue could eventually go to the court. I do think that this court is supportive of the idea of government speech and the government having latitude to specify what can and can't be said, that when we're talking about a scenario where it looks like the government is speaking or people reasonably understand the government itself to be speaking. So that's just my gut level reaction. But I think that there may well be some technical issues with respect to some of these laws that actually may make them problematic, even if a majority of this court might be prepared to accept some laws that regulate in this area like these laws do.
Yes, once again, the opinions is they could really say, like, this is specifically what we have a problem with and these other things we think are okay to continue.
Yeah, I mean, or, you know, and those things could work themselves out in the lower courts and legislatures could go back. And, you know, honestly, we're having upcoming elections again. You know, if here, for example, I think if Democrats were to retake the legislature in this state, I think there might be some likelihood of at least some of these laws being repealed, or if not repealed, significantly altered.
And speaking of politics, I mean, Governor Sununu, in theory, wasn't for this. It was because it was put through with the budget. So just like we were seeing with the abortion laws in the state, there's been some give when it comes to it because they've made it through the legislature and made it to the governor's desk. And I'd imagine many other states are going to be in a similar boat with just the slightest changing the political winds could really change how intense some of these laws are.
Absolutely. And the other thing is how many complaints are being made.
Yeah.
I don't know that we know that. You know, what sorts of complaints are being made? How will the lower court judges be reacting to those complaints? How will they be understanding the statute? There's still a lot of factual development that could be relevant. It might or might not be relevant to the underlying legal question that could be taking place over the next year or two if these laws remain in effect.
Thanks for listening to The Legal Impact presented by UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law. To help spread word about the show, please be sure to subscribe and comment on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Get the back episodes of the show and podcast links at law.unh.edu/podcast.